Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Brooke Shields, who is here to talk about her new memoir, There Was a Little Girl, The Real Story of My Mother and Me. Brooke, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate it, too. So you and your mother went through, you know, she passed away in 2012, but you were there by her side after going through so much together throughout your life. When did the idea to write the memoir come? Was it before she passed away or after?
No, I had no intention of writing about her or it. You know, I thought maybe in another decade or so, I would eventually write an autobiography if anybody still cared by then. But when she died, she was really mistreated by the New York Times, who decided that they weren't going to print my obituary that I paid for. And after asking me if they could put it on the front cover and asking me for more copy, I said, I'm not giving an interview. You know, my mother has just died. It's just 3 days after. I said, please print my obituary that I paid for. And they said they would. And what they did instead was not print a word I wrote and wrote a very harmful, just angry, negative, harsh critique of a woman that they never met.
Wow.
And I was rather infuriated and sort of gutted by it.
Right.
And then once I settled down, I thought, you know what? That's it. I'm tired of all the, you know, what people think they know the situation, people talking for me, people being desperate for me to be a victim. And and I thought, yeah, it's not working for me anymore. And I feel the need to just tell my version. So that, it really happened sort of quickly. And then I thought, you know, my relationship with my kids is so different and yet very similar in what I hope are just the positives. And that juxtaposition, I felt, was a more universal story than many of us would like to admit. And I thought, you know what? We're just the template for a very, very fascinating relationship that exists between a mother and a child, boy or girl. But the mother is this unbelievable archetype, and it's fascinating. And there are things that happen that are so universal, because I lived with an alcoholic parent.
Right.
There are some that were so extraordinarily bizarre because we were in the public eye and I was this thing. And, you know, but somewhere the through line is, you know, we all have them, whether we know them, not know them, have a good relationship, bad relationship, whatever it is,
right,
it's intense.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Definitely. There's a couple things I want to unpack there of what you said, but I guess first I'm going back to the Times article, and so it's almost like this memoir seems like you're trying to, you know, set the record straight for what you realize. I mean, you lived it. I mean, you're the one that should be telling the story. So what are some examples of some things that you thought they were too harsh about that you then tried to set the record straight in this one?
Well, the one thing I wanted to make sure is that I wasn't saying, you didn't get it right, you didn't know the truth. What I was saying is, this is what you interpreted because you needed to interpret this way.
Gotcha.
So you, whoever the you is, whatever your, you know, we all project to a certain extent on every single relationship we have.
Sure.
And so they needed, whoever it was, whether it was someone attacking me for something or attacking her, they needed to do that for themselves. So it's, I don't discredit anybody's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got an opinion, I get it. You think my mother's this, or you wouldn't do it this way, or you would have done it this way. That's your prerogative, and that is, you know, God bless you. But where it got ugly for me is when people were so insistent on me being an unwilling party to this relationship.
Right.
That, you know, somehow... Now, I stuck around for 50 years, you know, well, almost 50 years. So my part in all of it needed to also be acknowledged. You know, I was the one that wanted to come back home from school because I was so lonely and terrified and never been away from my mom before.
Yeah.
And it was my mother who said, you'll never forgive yourself if you do this. I know you.
Right.
You need this experience. Now, she wanted me home more than anybody, but she was unselfish about it. She also, to drown her sorrows, began drinking heavily again. You know, that was those were the things. I mean, where I was a victim was loving her. You know, that's the part that undid me.
Right.
The hope that this alcoholic was going to change, the hope that she would live a healthier life and be able to be confident. You know, those are the things that I wanted people to know, is that she was doing the best she could, but from where she came from and the tools that she had, this was the best. She didn't have any more than this.
For sure. And what sort of, I mean, another thing you mentioned earlier was, you know, what sort of things did you sort of take to her and apply, or at least notice in yourself when you were then raising your kids, that you looked in the mirror and said, oh my God, that's my mother, or, you know, a direct reflection of that?
It happens all the time. You know, it's that whole thing, it's either one thing or it's your mother. And, you know, you say, like, oh, I've turned into my mother. You know, to a certain extent, we come from these people. So I think it's our job to really try to be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I want to take? What don't I want to take? My mom is an alcoholic. I'm therefore very sensitive to how alcohol plays a part in my life. You know, fearing becoming a victim to it, or fearing that. So that's a piece, you know. Kids watch everything, and if they notice something, I don't want that to happen, because I don't want them to have that feeling that I had when I was little and I saw my mom drunk. I felt like she disappeared. So that's the piece. Flip side is, we laugh so much. We are silly. But I have rules and regulations, and there's bedtimes, and there's chores, and there's all that. And we didn't really have that. We sort of were like, oh, are you hungry? Let's go out at 9 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. on a school night. And it was bohemian and fun. But, you know, my kids need the schedule. They like the schedule. We're in one place. I take a lot of her. She was the mom that all the other kids wanted to talk to.
Right.
About their problems. They'd say, Schultz, you know, can I talk to him about something? You know, is it, I mean, you know, it's not me or anything, but my friend has
right.
this thing. And she'd be like, oh, let's talk about it. So your friend, huh? Now, and then, you
this
know,
girl,
she
this
was
girl
that,
I know.
Yeah, this girl I know. And she would provide that for them.
Right.
Or there was one little girl, she would say, who lied all the time. And she'd say, you know what, it's so funny. She said, it's the weirdest thing. I get this buzzing sound in my ear every time a little kid lies. And it's annoying. And then this one little kid came over and started telling a really lavish story. And the kid stopped and said, Mrs. Shields, did you hear a buzzing? And my mom said, you know, it's really faint, but it's there. And the kid said, oh, never mind. It was like she was the mom that took the time to talk to kids. And, you know, she wasn't cooking. She wasn't baking pies. She wasn't always on time for pickup, you know. But, you know, there's good and bad to all of it. And, you know, I try to be, my kids are mortified. You know, they'll say, why do you make it to talk to my friend like that? They don't want to be hugged by you.
Right.
I said, well, guess what? You come into this house, you're getting a hug.
Right.
I'm sorry, Jason, we don't have time for more questions. Thank you.